I'm John. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 6th of 2023, so I just celebrated 1 year. Thanks. I've known Charlie for 10 years now. I met him in September of 2014, and he had a broken leg from a car accident from drinking and driving. And, you know, when he just got sober again 8 months ago, broken leg, car accident, drinking and driving, I think Charlie was the only one that was surprised by that coincidence. Sorry, man. Okay. So I have a sponsor. He sponsors other guys. That guy has a sponsor. I'm available to sponsor. We do AA. I have a home group. It's the Friday night men's Keep It Simple group on at Yana at 8:15. I'm there pretty much every week. And then I have a black belt meeting that I go to that I've only missed one time. That was this week. I was very sick. My whole family was sick. I could not go. So that, like, those two things are very important to me. Let's see. We're here to talk about alcoholism, alcohol. So, you know, I had my first drink when I was, like, I think I was 11. And I was on a cruise. And there was, you know, a fridge that was left unattended, a couple beers in there. And I drank both of them, or maybe more. And I had, like, I just remember, so I was 11. My brother, like, gave me his little ID to get into the teenage club in the cruise ship. And I, like, went in there, and I was, like, this is, like, 2006. So, like, we were, people were grinding, if you guys remember that. I was 11 years old. I was grinding. And you know, I just, like, I had a blast. I got done with that, you know, no hangover, no consequences. I was just like, this is awesome. I want to be doing this every day. It's hard to get your hands on alcohol when you're 11 years old. I managed to do it, like, pretty frequently, and that landed me in a lot of trouble. When I was 13, I got sent away to a wilderness school, for, like, not just bad kids, but, like, the worst kids. And, like, I bring that place up for two reasons. One, because that's where I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, which, like, later on has saved my life. And two, like, for the longest time, because that place was so difficult for me, like, physically, mentally, I just thought that I could, like, because I could overcome that place, that I could overcome anything in my life, that, like, if I just put my mind to it, that I could beat anything, because I was able to beat this place. And I thought that about alcohol for the longest time. It's like, why can't I just, like, why can't I just will myself out of this situation when it comes to alcohol? Anyway, so, yeah, I was at that wilderness place, and, you know, like, they didn't let us out much, and so they did take us to AA meetings on Mondays and Tuesdays, and you had to get, like, approval to go there. And it was, like, the only time that we got to leave. So I was, like, I'm an alcoholic. And I remember, like, it was the same, like, meeting format every month. It was, like, the first week, this guy James would speak. The second week, this guy Merle would speak. This is up in Virginia, by the way, Merle. And then there was, like, an Ask It basket where you could, like, write things down, and then those guys would answer the questions. I can't remember what the last week was. But I just remember, like, that guy James, I heard that guy James speak, like, 12 times. You know, I was there for over a year. And he would always, like, say the same stuff that, and, like, when I first started listening to him, I couldn't relate to what he was saying, because he was talking a lot about, like, I lost my job. I lost my wife, my car, you know, like, all this stuff. And I was like, I'm 13, I don't have a job or a wife. But I, at some point, like, I remember he just said something, and it just clicked to me. He said, like, when I start drinking, I can't stop drinking. And that part, even at 13 years old, I connected to that. And he also said, when I'm not drinking, I'm thinking about drinking, and I'm probably going to do it again, no matter, like, what I try to do about it. And I also related to that, like, just the obsession of, like, thinking about drinking. I related to that even at that age. And in a way, like, that guy James, like, I kind of stayed, like, out of AA for a long time because I thought that those things that he was talking about, like the job and the why, like losing that was a requirement to come here, and it's just not. So if you're here and you're wondering, it's not a requirement to be an alcoholic. It's just those two things that I just said. You start drinking and you can't stop, might be an alcoholic. And if you're thinking about drinking, or if you drink when you don't want to, you might be an alcoholic. So I left that. I left there, and I didn't stay sober at all. I got in a lot of trouble after that. But you know, like I said, like just knowing that AA was here and what this place was about, and knowing that like it existed, it helped me later on. You know, I don't know. There's not really a whole lot to like that part of my life, like moving forward until I just like drank a lot. I got in a lot of trouble. I got like DUIs. That stuff, like, again, that's not a requirement for alcoholism, like getting in trouble. Some of like my worst consequences are not like reprimandations or whatever. Like, it's not like things that I got like written up for. A lot of like my major consequences are just like emotional stuff. Yeah, I met Charlie in 2014, so I had an attempt at sobriety then. It just like I couldn't figure out like it was hard for me to just like I was so young too. It was just like a confusing time for me, and but I did hit like I hit a point in my life where I was like I was drinking every night way more than I wanted to. I was living in like. I was like as close as you can get to being homeless without like sleeping on the street, and just like I had nothing going on in my life, and I at that time I had hit like a rock bottom, and I went back to treatment in 2016, and I stayed sober in 2016 for a couple years, and like I did AA the way that like you know people ask you to do AA. I showed up for things. I was just a part of AA, you know. I had a sponsor. I called him every day. I did steps. I like sponsored guys, and I think similar to what Charlie was saying, where he's just like, at a certain point, I was just like, I don't need to do this anymore. Everything that I have, I kind of want. So like, I don't need to do AA anymore. I have everything, and I also I did this, you know. I didn't realize that it was AA and God that like had kind of given me all that stuff. I thought that it was just like again like a result of like what I had done. And when you get in a place like that, it's very easy to just kind of like toss AA and your sobriety to the side and pick up a drink. And that's what I did. I drank, and like at that time, I had built a nice little life for myself. I was in college. I had like a nice little apartment, you know, and I was like still young at that time. I think I was like 24, and had a good job. I think I was even working at a treatment center, and had a car that like I had to like. The car that I had, I needed it because I had to put the interlock device on it so that I could get my license back to being clean. And I had already done that. That was why I drank too, partly. It was like, all right, I'm done with this shit. And just like within months, my life had just gone right back to where it was. You know, like just threw everything away. I failed out of college like so fast, like record speed. And because I just, like, I couldn't go to class. I couldn't show up for anything. Jared likes this story. I think I was, like, 25. I think I was turning 25. It was, like, birthday thing. And I had, like, told my dad. I was, like, Dad, like, I'm going to get, I'll take care of the cannolis. I was, like, I'm going to bring the cannolis to the birthday dinner. And I think it was, like, a Wednesday. And, you know, I started drinking at, like, 11 a.m. And had the cannolis, had full intentions of, like, showing up to this party with the cannolis. And then got a little too drunk that I was like, I don't want to drive. Like, I'm a little too drunk to drive that far. And I was like, but I remember that my buddy had, like, a quarter of mushrooms in his, like, in his underwear drawer. So I was like, I'll just go over to Austin's house. He won't mind. And, like, I like, knocked on his door. His roommate answered, and I was like, I'm here to get the mushrooms out of Austin's drawer. And he was like, no problem, dude. And he let me in. I ate the whole thing. And then, like, you know, like, and I just, like, continued to drink. And, like, the mushrooms are hitting me. And I was like, I, like, texted my dad. And I was like, Dad, I'm not going to make it with the cannolis. And I just, like, that I just could, like, I couldn't even show up to my own birthday party. Like, that's the kind of guy I am when I'm drinking. And, like, another, here's another, like, just a little anecdote about my alcoholism. I went to Europe, and I, like, backpacked through Europe, and I was like, oh, I'm going to get, like, these different gifts for, like, you know, my friends and family while I was there. And when I was in Greece, they drink this stuff over there. It's called ouzo. And I was like, okay, I'm going to bring back some, like, airplane bottles of ouzo for my brother. And I brought them back. It was no problem, like, right through customs. And then I was, like, going to South Carolina to, like, see him. And I was like, okay, now I'll bring the ouzo. But then, like, I had them in my backpack, and I was like, well, I hate that. By the way, I hate flying. Every time I fly, I usually get drunk. And I was like, damn, I have, like, six of these little bottles of ouzo in my bag. So I just, like, drank all of them. And then I, like, instead of just telling my brother, hey, I didn't get you anything, I just handed him the six empty bottles of ouzo. And I was like, yeah, man, they made me pour them out. And, like, he knew. Okay, anyway. Ouzo and cannolis. Okay. So, yeah, like, my drinking career is just, like, characterized by, like, the, like, a lot of those things, and a lot of, like, really miserable and pathetic experiences as well. And so maybe I'll just talk about some of that. So, like, the last, after I relapsed, by the way, during that, like, 2-year period, I really wanted to hike the Appalachian Trail, and, I talked to my sponsor about it, talked to a lot of guys about it, and everybody, this is like pre-COVID, so everybody was like, dude, that sounds fucking awesome, like, that sounds really cool, and, you know, the plan was to, like, do as much as I could, and then go start school, and I did that. I hiked, I made it to Pennsylvania, I stayed sober the whole time, you know, like, I don't think I brought, like, a big book with me, but I had my phone with the big book on it. I don't know if I, like, read it every day or anything like that, but I definitely prayed, and, like, I kept in, like, contact with people in AA. I wrote them postcards, and just, like, I did the best that I could. So, like, that was just, like, a cool experience, and that wasn't available to me if I hadn't been just, like, doing a good job in AA. And then, so now I'll take you guys to, like, it's February of 2020. Everybody knows what you were doing in February of 2020. I was going to go hiking again on the Appalachian Trail. I was like, I'm going to finish it this time or whatever. And I was sober again at that time. I had, like, 5 months. It wasn't great sobriety. And I went out with a buddy of mine. And with it, like, COVID, month later, like, a month into it, COVID started. Everybody, like, disappeared. Off the trail, and it's just, like, it got really weird. I wasn't being very vigilant about, like, my AA or anything like that, and we, both of us, like, relapsed together out there, and, like, within, I want to say, like, a month, I was, like, off the trail. I was, like, I was doing crazy stuff. Like, I'm an okay hiker. I can hike, like, 20 miles a day. I was hiking 20 miles a day, and then, like, 5 out to go get beer, and then 5 back in with the beer, and it's just like, you know, that's like definitely not, that definitely was not in my budget for like hiking and stuff like, so it's just like, that was awful. And just like, when I look at sobriety and I look at drinking and just like those two experiences, two completely like different experiences doing the same exact thing. So yeah, and then like after that, I just like I couldn't stay sober. I couldn't like I had like that desire to. I met all these great people in that couple years that I had sober, and you know, I knew what sobriety could do for me, and I remember like how good it felt to be happy, but I just like I could not bring myself to come sit down in an AA meeting and really like turn my will and my life over to the care of a higher power. Like from 2020 for 3 years, I just drank and like had, it was miserable. And really like the last like month before I got sober, and like in that time I had like my girlfriend and I had a baby, and like that was a very happy time for me, like that like getting ready to have the baby, like getting the house ready, and like I stopped drinking for that, you know. I was like, I'm gonna be good, and like yeah, it was just like a happy time. And then like he was born in December of 2022, and then like I only made it like 5 more months before I ended up getting sober. So like that, I just want to like paint a picture. Like the last like really month of my drinking, I was. My girlfriend and I were living together at the time. I was working. I'm a plumber. I was working for her father, who owns a plumbing company. I was driving one of his plumbing trucks, and I was drinking inside the truck every day, and like one of these filled with vodka, waking up shaking, you know, like lying about everything to everyone. And then, like, I would come home at night. She knew, but I would, like, just lie to her face, deny it. And it got to the point where, like, I wasn't even allowed inside the house because, like, you know, I'm danger to myself, the people around me, including a small baby. So I'm sleeping in the garage, you know, on just, like, a little couch in the garage. And, you know, just, like, waking up and, like, calling out sick in the middle of the day and then, like, showing up to, like, the family dinner that night. Like, two different guys, like, the one guy shaking in the morning from, you know, needing alcohol, and then the guy at night who's had a few with a smile on his face. And, like, that, you know, her father was just like, what's going on? You know, like, really, what's going on? And it got to the point where, like, they needed to, like, they felt like they needed to take legal action against me, and like I needed to be evicted from the home because like I was just I was a danger to everybody, and like I couldn't be trusted. And so when I got evicted, my mom, that same weekend my mom was coming into town to meet my son, and I had left my truck at the airport for her, and then never talked to her again for the rest of the weekend. Just like I just disappeared off the face of the planet. And even more, I stole my girlfriend's car because, you know, mine was at the airport, and I just like disappeared. So this lady was at home with a baby with no transportation, no idea where I was. And that had just like, it's sad to say, but that had just kind of become the norm around the house, that, you know, I would just disappear and take off and turn my phone off and you know, just check out. And I remember, too, that same weekend I was supposed to go see my dad at an art show, and I didn't show up for that. I didn't give any explanation, and I just kind of, like, I left her to kind of answer all those questions. So I had taken off with the car, and then I was like, I'm just going to drink this away, and I just want to feel a little bit better. So I, like, loaded up on all my favorite stuff, and I remember, like, and this is what happened, right? This is, like, the turning point for me in my life. I was really, really trying to drink to, like, make it all stop, and I could not get drunk. And that was, like, the first time in my life that, like, alcohol did not work for me. And that's when I called a couple of the guys that I had known for a very long time, David was one of them, who I've known for 12 years. And I just said, can you please, like, just take me anywhere, man. Lock me up. Get me, like, I'm done. And they came, they picked me up, and they took me to treatment. The people at Detox were like, you know, like, this is going to cost you some money. And one of the other guys that came and got me said, don't worry about it. And we'll talk about that later. And he just, like, took care of the bill for that. And so I got the detox. And, like, so, like, this is my journey into recovery now, up to now. When I got there, I met Jared. You guys know Jared? He was yellow when I got there. And, like, sometimes we just don't know how we're going to help people. And so when I met Jared, I'm not sure that he knew that he was helping me. But when I saw him, his outward appearance is exactly how I felt inwardly. Just like, no offense, but I just felt fucking dead inside. Sorry, man. And he gave me a lot of hope. He gave me hope because, like, when I looked at Jared, the obsession of alcohol had been removed from him. And that's all I desperately craved in that moment. So I got the detox, and, like, in my opinion, this is my experience. I did step 1, 2, and 3 just, like, right there when I, like, got admitted to the detox. You know, like, I admitted I was powerless. I came to believe that something greater than me could help me, and I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of this, like, treatment team. And I was just like, whatever you guys say, I'll fucking do it. Just, like, make it stop, basically. And they told me to get a sponsor. David's like my sponsor drug dealer. He's like, I can't help you, but I know a guy who can. Here's his cell phone number. Like, just give him a call. And like, I called the guy. Like, I didn't know the guy. You know, like, I kind of knew him, but, like, I didn't know him. And, like, he wasn't gonna come to the treatment center or anything while I was there. But it was just like I had a sponsor. You know, I was able to tell these guys, like, yeah, this is my sponsor, and, like, he knew who I was. Like, he knew that he was sponsoring me, and, like, I think, like, sometimes, like, especially in treatment when I was there, there's a lot of people who were just, like, got, like, really hung up on, like, the idea of, like, they're, like, you know, like, my sponsor, I need him to drive this, and, like, I'm gonna really just, like, wait it out. I need, like, 15 days to really make sure that this guy is right for me, and, like, well, like, and those guys, they're not here anymore, and, like, for me, it was just, like, this guy was willing to take me through the steps, and I was willing to be taken through the steps, and that was all I needed. So I got a sponsor. I did treatment, you know, to the best of my ability, and, like, they kept asking me to do stuff, and I just kept saying okay. And you know, like, it wasn't like great at first, you know, like, that girl and my baby, they were not happy with me, and neither were her parents. And at one point, her parents said, like, if you and him go back together, like, we're not going to help you anymore. They said that to her. And so that was, like, it was just, like, a tough time, you know, because, like, young family, just, like, trying to figure it out. And, like, in the center of all this is just me and all the fucking shit that I've stirred up. And now I'm trying to, like, make it all better. But, like, I just did, like, what I could, which was, like, I didn't leave treatment. And then when they told me to, like, go to IOP, go to a halfway house, I did those things. Just want to say one thing about the halfway house. The halfway house, like, a lot of people, again, with treatment, there's a lot of people who drag their feet, but the halfway house, it's not a bad place. Like, my best friends, like, Charlie, Jared, like, all those guys I know from the halfway house, and, like, it's just a good time. I'm not, like, trying to convince anybody, but if you're here, you're either in one, or you've been to one, or you're not ever gonna go. It's not, there's nobody, but, I'm not trying to convince you, but I will say, like, I just remember we had to do like check-ins, and like one time this kid checked in, and he was like, because there's just like the craziest characters there, and this guy checked in, and he was like, I'm not feeling too good today, and they were like, what's wrong, man? And he's like, I donated plasma today, and he's like, they stole my blood. And we were just like, what do you mean they stole your blood? He's like, they never gave it back, man. And you're just like, you don't get that if you don't go to a halfway house. I appreciated that. And let's see, as soon as I was able to, I started going to this black belt meeting that my sponsor, you know, asked me to go to. And it's like, I think for some people, it's like a form of external motivation where it's like all these guys are like gonna, they act like they're gonna kick your ass if you don't do this stuff, but they're not. But I think for some people, they need that like external motivation. For me, like, and I would go in there every week and I'd just be like, yeah, I'm John, and like I made my commitments. And then that was it. And like, I just wanted to get in it and get out of there. And somebody like pulled me aside and they're like, you need to start sharing in this meeting, because like the people in there, they want to hear what you have to say. And even if they don't, you need to start thinking about, like, start have some critical thinking about like your sobriety. And so that helped me out a lot, because like I would just kind of like go through my week and not even think about anything. And then I would just check in and say, yeah, I made my commitments, and that would be it. But, you know, that meeting started to make me really think about, like, okay, what did I do this week? How is my recovery doing? How am I? And I've grown, like, pretty close with those guys in that meeting. It's still, like, mostly unbearable for me, but I still go. Okay. Let me think. So my relationship with that my girlfriend at the time, I was living at the halfway house. It was hard. Like, I was living in Tampa, they live in St. Pete, so it was hard to like, and like I'm doing AA, I'm doing IOP, I'm doing all this stuff like every night, going to work, and it was like hard for me to kind of, and like I had this little boy at home that I love, and I just wanted to see him, and It was just hard to like find time to do that. I'm running out of time, but slowly things got better. I moved over to the St. Pete halfway house because, like, again, like things with her and her parents, they just weren't great. And you know, this kind of like brings me to like, I guess, the amends process, because like at some point I was able to like finally make amends to her dad, because like I said, I was working for the guy. I put her daughter in a situation where she felt like it was so, like, she was so afraid that she needed to involve law enforcement, and we have a little boy at home, and you know, I'm driving his truck around drinking, which is just like a nightmare. And I was able to make amends to him, and you know, I just like laid it out. I was like, hey, here's what I did. And he's like, we just want to see you do good, man. Like, at the end of the day, like, that's all we care about. And so I made amends to him. During early on in my sobriety, my brother got married. I was not invited to the wedding as a result of, like, kind of my behavior through my drinking. You know, he just, like, he didn't feel like it, like, he kind of thought I would be, like, a huge liability if I showed up there, that I would ruin his wedding. That's kind of what he thought. And he wasn't wrong, you know. Like, had I not been sober, I very well could have done that. And so there's just like a lot of stuff that like I had to like pick up the pieces for. And I know I'm running out of time, but finally, like in December, like when I moved to St. Pete, I was able to like spend a lot more time face to face with my girlfriend at the time, and our son, and just kind of like, because I was just a lot closer. So and like, again, like all this stuff is like, it's slowly over time, and it's not on my terms, because like my terms, like I would have just gotten out of treatment and went right back home, but it wasn't on my terms. And like slowly things started to get better. And then I remember it was like, it must have been like Christmas, I said, like, man, I don't want to go home, you know? And she said, I don't want you to go home either. And I think I finally went back home. Like, I think I was moved back in January. And then we got married in March. It's been a lot of, like, big life stuff, you know, and, like, all crammed into, like, the last year. And the biggest of which it feels like right now is about a month ago, my dad, he was so sick. My dad was, like, he was just, like, in and out of the hospital all the time. And his wife called me, and she was like, hey, they're letting your dad out of the hospital tomorrow, but I can't be there. I've taken too many sick days. Can you come pick him up? And I said, like, it wasn't even like a thought in my mind. I was just like, no problem. And I called my boss, which, like, I'm not, like, just so grateful that I'm able to, like, call my boss and just say, hey, I need the day off. And it's not because I'm, like, hungover or anything like that. It's just because I need the day off. And he was like, no problem. And I picked my dad up from the hospital. It was Thursday, April 18th. I brought him home, and I went home. And then I was at Friday, I was at my men's meeting like I normally am, and I got a phone call, and it was the hospital, and they said, we're trying to revive your dad right now. And I left the meeting, and like this, like, I don't know what it is, like, I guess it's like the promises or whatever, like, I just felt this, like, I knew what I was going into, I knew what I was driving up to, and, you know, we're just like intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. I just felt like calm on the drive over. I prayed, called a couple people, and when I got there, you know, it wasn't good, and they're like, you know, we can keep doing this, but we don't think that it's the best idea. And I had to say, like, okay, you know, we don't have to do the compressions anymore. And my dad died, you know, the day after I picked him up from the hospital. And it's just like such a blessing that, like, I was able to make that decision. I wasn't drinking. I didn't feel any guilt about that, to say, like, you guys don't have to do this anymore. 'Cause, like, just like in a different life, if I had been drinking, like, I just would have carried that decision with me for the rest of my life. I don't have to carry that with me. And an even bigger gift was, like, his wife had told me, you know, when they were, like, trying to figure out, like, who could pick him up from the hospital, they were like, he said, you can count on John. Like, he'll come get me. And so, like, in my eyes, like, the amends was made, you know? Like, I was, I did the action. I showed up when I was asked to show up. So, and it's been tough. Like, it's just been, like, it's a lot of stuff that you don't think about when somebody dies. And, you know, my whole family came down, and I was just, like, able to stand, like, tall for them. And, I don't know, like, it just feels good to, like, when I saw my brother, you know, when he came down, and he was just, like, having such a hard time with it, and, like, I felt so fortunate that, like, in AA, we can just take a problem, put it into, like, the AA machine, and it spits out an answer, and, like, I can just do that. Like, when I was going through all that, I just called so many guys. Like, I had, like, at least 10 guys in my phone who, like, their dads had died either while they were sober or before they got sober. And they all had a piece of, like, something nice to say that, like, helped me out in that moment. And I was talking with one of my friends. And we were just talking about, like, you know, like, we missed our dads and stuff. And I was like, he was like, you know, it's like, I haven't told anybody this. Sorry, man. But he was just like, sometimes, like, when I pray, I just, like, I ask my dad for help, and I was like, man, I've been doing that. And I was like, I didn't know you were allowed to do that. And he's like, yeah, man, it's okay. Like, it's whatever, like, whatever the higher power is for you, like, that's it. And I wouldn't have, like, I think I would have just walked around, like, wondering if that was okay if I hadn't talked to this guy, you know, and, like, been on the fence about it. But that's why we talk to people in AA. Pick up the phone and just talk to people, because, like, they will either tell you what you're thinking is absolutely insane, or they'll validate, like, and say, like, yeah, it's okay. And, you know, like, I get to be a part of, like, a lot of cool stuff because I'm in AA. I was able to be at Isaac's wedding. I'm going to a bachelor party in Mexico City with one of my buddies who lives in Seattle. Like, I'm having a big wedding this year. Like, my buddy David published a book. Like, it's all this stuff is just here. It's here for the taking. I didn't ask for any of this. I don't think David asked for any of this. I don't think Adam asked for it. Like, it's just here because we're doing AA. The same way that, like, when I pick up a drink, it's the byproduct is, like, the problem isn't the drink. It's the same way that stopping drinking isn't what, like, isn't the good, like, isn't what gives me all the good stuff in life. Coming and doing AA is what gives me all the good stuff. And, like, I don't know, I'm just, like, so full of gratitude. I got, like, a couple minutes. So full of gratitude. Like, every day I like, go through a new situation. I was sick this week, and it felt good to just, like, text my boss and be like, hey, man, I'm sick. And he was like, no problem. Because it used to be, like, this whole, like, convincing game where it's like, yeah, like, here are my symptoms, and, like, I'm actually sick this time. But, like, it just feels good to just kind of, like, live life. And I have to lie, and it just, like, that part just feels good. And yeah, I don't know. Like, I've met a lot of cool people here in AA. I don't plan on leaving. I think, like, similar to what Charlie was saying, it's just, like, I used to get, like, really hung up on, like, how sober I really was. And, like, you know, like, I had a couple years and I was working at a treatment center. And, like, I don't even think about that stuff anymore. I just, like, I wake up. My sponsor said, like, when I got sober, he was like, you need to ask God for help every day. And he said, you know, and he was like, you should also kind of, like, remind yourself why you're asking for help. It's because you're an alcoholic. And he said, once you've prayed, just try to act like you prayed for the whole day. And that, like, I haven't done that every single day. It's hard to, like, act like I've prayed all the time. But when I think about that, it really helps me. And I think with that, I'll just, and thank you so much.